Well, this is Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Well, we were supposed to have a guest tonight. His name is L.J. Chavez. So I'm going to have to fill in for L.J. because I did interview him last week, and his story is a very important part of the puzzle that faces us today. As we approach a situation where we are told by people like Henry Kissinger that, and this was an article that appeared, I believe it was the 13th of September, it appeared in papers across America, really I think of the Washington Post, but several other newspapers picked it up. It was called Leaving Lebanon, and Henry Kissinger was talking about what's going on in the world today and the dangers of Iran and really what a terrible situation we face and how the world really can't face a nuclear Iran. And he went on to say we really only have two options. One is, of course, the construction of a new world order. And the other is catastrophic results. And there was basically a world calamity. And that doesn't give us really much of a choice, does it? Because if we go into the world order, we give up our national sovereignty, we give up our freedom, we give up our Constitution. And that is exactly what Henry Kissinger and the members of the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations that he wants have been working for many years. But they tried it. Of course, Henry wasn't around during the First World War, but the First World War was really all about creating such horrible, horrible slaughter. I mean, there were over 21 million people who were killed and twice that many injured. And people in Europe were willing to give up their sovereignty and everything just to avoid another war. And that's what it was all about. It could have been stopped at any time. There was no reason for America to have gone into that war, but we went into the First World War so that we would prolong the war, because Woodrow Wilson and the man who controlled Woodrow Wilson, a man named Edward Mandel House, who was deeply involved in the occult and had that amazing ability to control other people's minds. Edward Mandel House, of course, convinced Woodrow Wilson that we had to get into the war to bring about the League of Nations and the war to end all wars. The war to make the world safe for democracy. Those were the slogans they sold to the American people in World War I and convinced them they had to go overseas to fight the wicked Huns who were cut off the hands of little Belgian boys and the breasts of Belgian women. And oh, they were just terrible, terrible people. And literally tens of thousands of American boys volunteered to join the American Expeditionary Force and went to Europe to fight the wicked Huns who were cutting off the hands of little Belgian boys and the breasts of Belgian women. But when they finally got there, and I remember talking to a man many years ago who had been, with the first group that ever got to Belgium, and most of his friends had died along the dusty roads in the trench warfare. And when he got to Belgium, there weren't any little boys with their hands cut off. There weren't any Belgian women with their breasts cut off. It was all a lie. And the First World War was fought to bring about a League of Nations. It was based on lies and deceit, as all wars are. It's about time people begin to understand how the public is manipulated, how we are governed. Our tastes are suggested. Our ideas are formed largely by men we have never heard of. And that quotation, of course, comes from Edward Bernays, the man who was employed by the American Tobacco Company to get women to smoke and to sell the American people the idea that fluoridated water would give our children a beautiful smile. Didn't mention, of course, it was going to destroy their minds as well. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, we're going to have open lines this evening, so if you'd like to call in, our telephone number is 1-888-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2-2 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And so give us a call if you'd like to. But we're simply going to the background of the wars of the 20th century. And of course, there was no reason for America to go into the First World War. This wasn't our battle. It was all contrived anyway. And of course, people say, oh, it was a result of the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand in Sarajevo. And that was the excuse. They had to have an excuse to get the war going, just as they had to at the incidents of the Spanish-American War in 1898. They had to have the sinking of the Maine. Oh, those wicked Spanish sunk the battleship Maine, and 30 or 40 or 50 Americans were killed. And we had to go to war, and we went to war. We lost 5,000 troops, and we ended up killing between 200,000 and 1 million to 1.5 million Filipinos, as we liberated them from the wicked Spanish who were wanted to impose their will on them. Between 200,000 and 1 million to 1.5 million Filipinos, we don't know. Those are the various figures I've gotten off the internet from people who've studied it. Why did we go into the Spanish-American War? It was all about America's manifest destiny. And people really don't understand that there has been a small group of wicked people who have always wanted to use America's military and financial power to enslave the world. This is what it was really all about. And it was there at the time of the Spanish-American War. It was there at the time of the First World War. And when the U.S. Senate refused to ratify the League of Nations treaty, why, it ensured that there would be a Second World War. Now, you probably believe everything you've been told about what led up to the Second World War and Chamberlain and appeasement. And what you really don't understand is what Professor Carol Quigley tells you in his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. How there were a small group of people in Great Britain called the Cliveden Set, and they were really, of course, the front for the Round Table, which was the secret society that Cecil Rhodes had created, and they were encouraging Adolf Hitler at every turn, and American corporations were in Germany building up Hitler's war machines. And that, if you don't believe it, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send you a copy of a letter I found among Colonel House's papers from Ambassador Dodd, who's writing to Colonel House in 1936 saying, why are American corporations building up the military here in Germany, building up the German war machine? Nobody wants a war. He didn't understand. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our regularly scheduled guest didn't show up, so going to be open lines this evening. And we were talking about how there was a small group in Great Britain called the Cliveden Set that was actually doing everything they could to encourage Adolf Hitler, you know, in that period after he came to power in 1933, and they worked very closely with him. In fact, if there are several books you can read to verify this, one of them is called Votive for a Mission, written by the son of the Duke of Hamilton. The other is Prisoner Number 7, written by Lieutenant Colonel Eugene Byrd. And both of them tell exactly the same story about the flight of Rudolf Hess to Great Britain during the Second World War. And Hess went to Great Britain to contact the members of the Round Table, this group of British aristocrats that Hitler thought, you know, were very, very friendly. In fact, they did everything to encourage him, first of all, to take the Rhineland, and then to take Austria, and then to take the Sudetenland. And they encouraged him at every turn. And when Chamberlain went over there to negotiate with him, you've heard about appeasement? It wasn't appeasement. They were encouraging him to expand. Why? Because they wanted a justification for World War II, and Hitler wasn't really smart enough to realize he was being manipulated. He was an evil and wicked man, but he was manipulated by evil and wicked men, just as today there are evil and wicked people out there like Saddam Hussein. But what about the people who encouraged Saddam Hussein and financed Saddam Hussein all there during the 1980s? People like Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, you've seen pictures of Rumsfeld over there shaking hands with Saddam Hussein, and the American government financed Saddam Hussein all during the 1980s and gave him war materials. Of course, we were giving war materials to the Iranians as well. We were giving war materials or selling war materials to both sides. But we gave billions and billions of dollars to Saddam Hussein under one guise or another. But we could never let the American people know We were financing this wicked dictator exactly as the Roundtable Group and the Clivetons had done in Great Britain during the 1930s in building up Adolf Hitler in preparation for the coming war. And until people began to understand that these are all contrived, you can't really understand anything going on in the world today. So we got World War II going, basically, of course. The excuse for the war was the fact that Hitler had invaded Germany from the west. But Russia had invaded Poland from the west, but Russia invaded Poland from the east at the same time. And so immediately England and France declare war, but not on Russia and Germany, just on Germany, because that's what it was always all about. And what most people don't understand is that American and British financiers financed the Bolsheviks from the time of the Russian Revolution. If you'd like to verify much of what we're saying, two books written by Professor Sutton, which we carry, and Professor Sutton was at the Hoover Institute for many years. One is Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. The other is Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, and we cover much of this in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get the documentation. And if you don't believe this is true, of course, I was just reading or rereading a segment of Zygmunt Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, on page 135, that's 135, at the bottom of the page, he talks about Professor Sutton's work and the fact that American corporations helped to finance the Bolshevik during the early years of this tyranny. Well, we are going to do open lines this evening, so our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California. We have Jim calling from Missouri. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Dr. Stan?
Doing just fine.
I'm just finishing up that book, Project Daylily, and I don't think I have ever read anything like it.
Isn't that an amazing book? I read the original draft of it. And I believe it's all true. And I believe, of course, he's changed the names to protect himself from getting sued, but I believe it's absolutely
true. Well, I looked on the MD Anderson website. You can tell exactly who he's talking about.
Right. well, of course, for our listeners out there, Project Daylily was written by our friend Dr. Garth Nicholson, who's one of the leading scientists in the world, who's written over 600 peer-reviewed papers. Now, nobody ever wrote 600 peer-reviewed papers. One of the most prolific scientists in America. I had the opportunity of catching a taxi, I think it was in Boston one time, and sitting, I was in the taxi with somebody else. We were both going to the same place. He was an Oriental young man, and as you will sort of strike up a conversation with him, and it turned out he was in cancer research, and it trained at MB Anderson. So I said, oh, do you know my friend, Dr. Garth Nicholson? And this young man's face lit up, and he said he was my teacher. He was the most wonderful man. We all loved him. In fact, he said, I have right here in my valise, a paper he just sent me to review for one of the scientific journals that he is editor of. But would you like to give our listeners a little about your opinion of what he's writing about? He's writing about people at the highest levels of our government creating terrible diseases that are afflicting people all across America today.
Well, just to let somebody know how valid this man is, if you ever took biology or anything like that and you read the fluid mosaic model of the phospholipid bilayer of the cell membrane, he was one of the men that discovered that.
Right.
But he helped discover what was one of the true causes of the Gulf War illness, and they were doing a lot of the testing to perfect the agents that caused the Gulf War illness at the very place where he was working.
Right.
So the sad thing was, as the book reveals, there were people who already had a lot of the knowledge that he and his wife had to risk their lives to uncover. They could have saved years of these people's careers and thousands of lives to tell him what they were already looking for, because they already had been teaching it at the Armed Forces Medical School.
Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, right? In fact, they actually have...
Well, the military actually has a medical school.
Right.
And they got a hold of class notes from the pathology class of the military's own medical school. They were teaching the people who were going to be military doctors they were already teaching them about it in their medical school, but they wouldn't give these folks any help at all. And the only reason they found out about it was somebody that was attending the school had thrown their notes away in the trash, and they had to dig through the trash to find it.
Well, I think one of the most terrible things, you know, if you read Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, I just referred to, and there at one point he talks about in a footnote at the bottom of the page how in the future, now he's writing the book in 1970, how in the future we're going to be able to create storms and droughts and new chronic diseases that will disable the enemy. And so you won't have to defeat them. They simply will have no ability to resist. And I would like to suggest to Brzezinski, people like you and I are the enemy. They have created new chronic diseases like chronic fatigue syndrome, like AIDS, like Lyme disease. A million Americans are disabled with that, and many other chronic diseases that haven't been able even, you know, identified yet. But we have millions of people with these chronic infections, all new.
That gentleman.
A direct result. It's a massive experiment. They experiment on our boys in the Army. And I would tell anybody, do not go into the military because you have no rights. And if they want to experiment on you, they will. And they've destroyed the lives of millions of people. And you can go to the VA website. And for anybody out there who wants to check this out, of the men who went to the Gulf War, about 695,000 of them, according to the VA's own figures, over 80,000 of them are dead. Over 80,000 are dead. Now, if you want the figures, you'd like to get them. I got it off the VA website. You'll have a hard time getting it, but I'll be glad to send any of our listeners a copy of that. 80,000 of them are dead. These are the young men who just 15 years ago were over in the Gulf fighting for American freedom. And we only lost maybe 100 in battle, and 80,000 of them are dead today.
How many did you say are sick?
80,000 of them are dead. In other words, they give you the number who went, and then the number presumed to be living, and the difference is about 80,000. Unbelievable figures, and you're never going to hear them discussed, but we'll be glad to send copies to any of our listeners who want to check and see this, or you can go to the VA's own website and look under the Gulf War of Veterans information that they have. They have a whole segment on it, and it's there, no question.
That gentleman, the other gentleman that you've had on before, Don Scott,
right,
wrote a very good little article. It's not too long, about the mycoplasma.
I can
give the website for that if anyone
go right ahead. Go right ahead.
It's called Nexus Magazine. That's nexusmagazine.com/articles/mycoplasma.html.
Well, according to Dr. Nicholson, the Nazi war criminals were actually working on these mycoplasms as a vehicle of creating chronic disease during the Second World War, before and during the Second World War. And following the Second World War, many of these people who should have been executed for their war crimes because they were experimenting on the people in the prison camps, they were brought to America and given nice, comfortable jobs and lived here the rest of their lives. And most of this talk about, oh, we're tracking down the wicked war criminals, that's simply a cover for Operation Paperclip. And if you're out there in the audience and you haven't heard about Operation Paperclip or read the book Secret Agenda, or we actually have a four-tape set of interviews with the author of that book, and it's just called Operation Paperclip. Linda Hunt wrote the book. But you need to read it. You need to understand that not only did we help thousands of Nazi war criminals come to the United States, we helped 10,000 escape to South America. And only two of them were ever captured. They were captured by the Jewish Nazi hunters, that was Eichmann and Klaus Barbie, and we protected all the rest of them. And you have to ask yourself why. And the only reason anybody would do that, I would think, is that they are terribly evil, and they saw nothing wrong with the Nazi movement. Well, anyway, you really enjoyed the book, huh?
It is amazing.
All right.
I've never read anything like it.
Oh, well, of course.
The sad thing is, it's like a Tom Clancy novel.
Yeah, the trouble is, it really is true. Hang on there, of course. Yeah, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, we have Jim calling from Missouri. He's just finished reading, or just finishing reading, a Project A Lady written by Garth Nicholson, which we carry here because we think it's an important book, and we want every American to read it to understand that they are experimenting on the American people, and they're experimenting on our troops in the military, and they're experimenting on people in the prisons, and as they did in Huntsville, Texas, why the disease got out of the prisons and into the community there and just devastated the population. And they sent people from the CDC not to determine what was wrong, but to make the people feel that there was just all in their heads, there was no disease at all. And several of Dr. Nicholson's associates, two of them apparently were his medical students, and one was his superior, retired Air Force colonel, were murdered to cover up this story. And the fact that nobody seems to want to cover this in the mass media, I think is just a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think.
You know, the most shocking thing to me in the book was the fact that they had bought those five nursing homes and were testing that material on those folks, too.
Well, I think that they will stop at absolutely nothing because these are people without a moral conscience.
I mean, that proves it. That proves that.
In fact, there's another wonderful book. We don't carry it any longer, but it's called Hoaxler's Web. It was written by Hillary Johnson, I think was her name. And it is the story of the chronic fatigue syndrome and how they actually used this, and they actually introduced it into the ventilation system in a school up in Lake Tahoe to contaminate a number of the teachers just to see what would happen. And here is where you had your first cluster of cases of chronic fatigue syndrome. And then they spread this terrible disease all across America. And today, over 2 million Americans have either chronic fatigue or chronic fibromyalgia. These are new diseases, and they are infectious diseases. And they spread from the individual who's infected to their spouse to intimate contact and into members of the family. And there's an organized effort at the highest levels of the CDC and other government agencies to convince the people who have it that it's all in their head. There's absolutely nothing wrong with them.
Isn't it interesting that they never decide to do that in the buildings where they work?
Well, of course not, Tim. But you see, if you're going to run these experiments, you have to have guinea pigs, and they use human guinea pigs. I mean, and it is so unconscionable. In fact, we know, for instance, that at one time off the west coast of California, they sprayed a shirasha from boats just to see how it would drift ashore, and actually it killed at least one person at Stanford. And when they had a trial to suing the government, of course, the judge made sure that the jury came in with a verdict in favor of the government. They can't let the American people realize they're using us as human guinea pigs. They certainly can't let the American people understand what they're doing to the minds of our children with fluoride and with aspartame and with the mercury in the vaccines, and or with the older people with the mercury in the vaccines. And right now, people all across America are rushing into Walmart and other stores to get their influenza shot loaded with mercury, which increases, for those between 60 and 65, the incidence of Alzheimer's disease 1,000%. And anybody who wants to verify that, Dr. Pudenberg's article up on the web, or we'll be glad to send you a copy of his abstract if you call us at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Jim, I wish we could get everybody to get a copy of that book. Hold just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Jim from Missouri. And, of course, that's because our regularly scheduled guest, L.J. Chavez, who had a wonderful story to tell about what really happened on 911, has been so harassed over this last couple of weeks. And he's lost his job simply because he came forward and told the truth about what he saw when he was a sergeant in the military in Florida at the command center on the morning of 911. But go ahead, Jim.
No, just I have no words to describe that book.
Well, I hope that you'll tell others about it. And, of course, if you haven't yet seen my video or talk on planned population reduction, it really sort of gives you an overview of all the things that they're doing to destroy the minds of the American people.
The scary thing is, this all took place down there in Texas.
Right.
And that professor that Alex Jones had mentioned several times, that Dr. Pianca, works down there, and he is apparently a very charismatic individual, and he works in the field of, I forget exactly what his field is, but he has students that may likely one day be working here. And he said that what our best hope is for an airborne Ebola.
Oh, you're talking about this professor down there.
Yes,
yes,
sir.
We're talking about if we could just kill 90% of the world's
population.
He got
a standing ovation.
Right.
And got the Scientist of the Year award from some insane well, actually, it's not an insane organization. It's, you know, a mainstream scientific organization down there. It's, you know, I agree with you. I've told people what you say about sometimes I think I live in a world gone mad, and other times I'm absolutely certain of it.
Well, you know, really, you almost have to get people the original documentation, and we offer to send them copies of the pages from the UNESCO Courier in November of 1991, where Jacques Cousteau is quoted as saying it's necessary to eliminate 365,000 people a day.
I handed out your population control syllabus in my or monograph in my Sunday school class.
What sort of response did you get?
Disbelief.
Well, ask them to check.
Well, I don't. I mean, it's not that they disbelieve your research and information. They disbelieve. You know, it's just hard to believe at first, at least.
Well, the thing, what we have to do is understand that we have to get people to start thinking. We have to get them to start thinking clearly and to be willing to reject everything that they have believed in the past. And it's a hard process. You don't want to give up your beliefs. You are, and your beliefs are one. But if we can get people to realize one thing, that there is an effort to, say, harm our children intentionally, purposely, and that's why we keep talking about the use of fluoride and vaccines and aspartame and all the complications of these things. If we could just get them to realize that one thing, and realize they were lied to about that, or get them to realize they were lied to about what happened on 9-1-1, then we can begin to break them free from this control that exists over the minds of most people. And it's a long, slow process, you know.
It is.
I talked to a Dr. Davidson Lohr this afternoon, who had fought in Vietnam, who was over there, you know, filled with ardor, filled with patriotism, filled with the feeling he was fighting for our freedom here at home. And he said it took him 20 years before he realized Vietnam was a fraud. We never went there to fight communism. It's hard, you know, when you've seen your friends die and you perhaps almost died yourself, to realize that that it was all for nothing. But we have to do that if we hope to head off the war that I fear is coming now. And this could certainly be the war of civilizations. In fact, that's a term I think that Henry Kissinger, something very similar to that, used in his recent article in the Washington Post. And they really are planning a war that will be far more terrifying and horrible than anything we've ever seen before.
May I ask you another question?
Sure you can.
I don't want to hold anyone up.
Let me just give our telephone number one more time. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to give us a call. Here it's going to be open lines this evening, simply because our regularly scheduled guest, I think he's probably afraid to go on the air again. He's had so much pressure and so many threats and lost his job simply because he told the truth. But what was the other question you had, Jim?
Do you think that this mycoplasma is what causes AIDS?
Mycoplasma is a cofactor. In other words, all the people with this typical AIDS, by definition, have a positive HIV test, but most of them, probably 90% or more, have a mycoplasma. Maybe they all do, but his mycoplasma is hard to get. But certainly even Luc Montagnier, who is the real founder of the HIV virus, felt that mycoplasma was a cofactor. But nobody ever talks about it. There's a conscious effort to cover up the truth about this, because imagine creating a disease that has already killed between 20 and 30 million people throughout the world, and it was all done intentionally. Well, this is Dr. Stan Reck here at Radio Liberty, and we have Jim on the line from Missouri. And if you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Jim was asking me about the mycoplasm as the etiology of AIDS. It is a cofactor. By definition, everybody with AIDS has a positive HIV test. But most of them have a mycoplasm along with that, and it's the mycoplasm that does the devastation. It's the HIV, of course, that destroys the immune system, and then the mycoplasm moves in and creates so much of the disease. And this is not a regular mycoplasm. In most instances, it is a mycoplasm fermentis, and this one is specifically genetically engineered. In fact, the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, as you remember from the book that you read, Project A-Lily. The Armed Forces Institute of Pathology has the patent on this genetically engineered form of mycoplasm. And it's so hard for people to believe that anything could be that evil. In fact, I will have to admit, and I hate to admit, but I couldn't believe this for so many years. I didn't want to believe it until finally reality forced me to believe it. And I had to realize, of course, that AIDS was a genetically created disease. It was created in the laboratory and is part of a program to kill homosexuals, and it is specifically engineered to kill blacks. And actually, that's why they have so much more of it in Africa than we have here. And at the time when the epidemic started out, and we saw how it was just multiplying or so rapidly in homosexuals, and we had this one cohort in San Francisco that had received an experimental hepatitis B vaccine starting, I think, in about 1979. And so they had all the blood specimens from these young men, these young homosexuals who had volunteered, to try to find a cure for hepatitis B, or at least a vaccine for it. And as they were able to get those blood specimens out and follow the course, and they were able to see this disease just exploding. And as it got, from 10% to 20% to 30% to 50% to 75% of those young men came down with the disease, we assumed, unjustifiably, I'll have to admit now, but at the time, it seemed that we would see the same thing in the heterosexual population, now realizing that they'd been intentionally infected with this experimental vaccine. And then, of course, what we didn't realize, of course, that the white people have protection against this disease because of the genetic makeup, but certainly the blacks do not, which is why in Africa today, in Botswana, 46% of the women who are tested in Botswana who are pregnant, they're infected and they're all going to die. That's a very successful policy. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have Jim calling us from Missouri. Jim, do you have anything else you want to say?
No, sir. I think that's about it.
All right, fine. God bless. Thank you so very much.
Well, one last thing, I guess, before I go, just to verify something that you just said. I heard recently on Science Friday on NPR that there's a genetic mutation on two genes that make it hard for someone to be infected with HIV.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's a genetic mutation in whites. And you don't see the genetic mutation in blacks.
I was going to say, coincidentally, 90% of the people or so with that mutation happen to be white.
Right. And that's, of course, I believe, how they genetically engineered this so it would have a predisposition for blacks. And, if you go into a lot of these countries in Africa where, the average person would live, say, to be 64, now the average person lives to be about 32 or 30 years of age. We're killing off Africa. That's what it's really all about. But they can't let the American people know that. It's too horrible to contemplate. But they know exactly what they're doing.
May I ask you one last thing?
Okay, fine.
Dr. MacArthur.
Yes.
June 1969.
Right.
Do you believe that he was talking about the mycoplasma or the HIV?
I think he was talking about both of them. I think this is a combined disease. And you get a lot of that information from Don Scott's work. There was a special virus cancer project that they developed under the auspices of the CIA to create new diseases. And it was started in the 50s and continued, I think, up until the 70s. And, of course, they created all sorts of new and horrible diseases. And they're still working on it. And I believe that Ebola and Marburg disease and so many of these other terrible lethal diseases were developed there, and they're just waiting for an opportunity to unleash them on the population as a whole. Okay.
Well, thank you so very much. God bless you, Dr. Stan.
Thanks so very much. Okay, fine. Well, again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We've got Daryl calling from Johnstown, New York. Hi, John. How are you doing, Daryl?
How are you, Doc?
I'm doing fine.
Okay. I was just curious about something. I did my time in Vietnam and all that. I realized that in America, reasons for wars is to lessen our population. And the United States doesn't have the largest population, but there are other countries that do, and I think they're joining in on that. Wars are designed to reduce population.
Well, that's certainly one of their purposes, right?
Yes, they're designed to reduce population.
But they don't.
But what is the result of all this? When you do reduce the populations, India is one, China is one. China is also interested in one. The same thing. But what is the result of that? Does that make worldwide control more easier to control because of that result?
Well, I think that really what they want to do, of course, is destroy the minds of those people who are left behind and make them chronically ill so they won't be able to resist. Actually, as Bertrand Russell says on page 103 of his book, The Impact of Science on Society, wars really don't do that good a job. Oh, they kill a lot of people, but that's not enough to keep the population down. And as he says there, what we really need is the Black Plague to be spread across the world once in every generation. Then people can procreate just as much as they want. And I think we put those pages, actually, in my Hidden Agenda syllabus because we got permission from the publisher to go ahead and reproduce them. And I think you have to understand that they really want to use disease for mass population control. It's much
more
effective.
But you've already got that. You've got AIDS.
Well, I know, but it's
you've
only
got AIDS, which is China. China right now is very concerned about AIDS. That is a worldwide plague, AIDS, right now.
But of course,
and designed as far as Vietnam and other wars was to kill off our male population, who are the sperm givers, to, control our population. But what is the actual end of this result? Is it to control, worldwide government, make the government a worldwide government, because we don't have the population. As far as making them space cadets or something like that, you don't have to do that, because they don't have the control in the first place. If your population is down to a very, very minimal, there's no one within your population that can have any fight or control.
Right. I think they want to kill off about 90% of the world's population. This is the figure that they've used. They use that certainly on the Georgia
Guidestones. But who's doing this?
What's that?
Who is doing this? Doctor, come on, give me an answer.
Who is doing this? Well, I would suggest that you read the material put out by the population control people. Or have you read, of course,
I'm not talking about the... It can't be only the American government. It has to be a worldwide situation.
Oh, it is. But, of course, it is the American. It's the Rockefeller Foundation and their organizations they've spawned that is the major force behind that.
I don't think they're in control of the whole world as far as this is going on. I think, a lot of countries are doing the same thing. Possibly, as you say, they're following that particular agenda.
All right, let me suggest, if you're really interested in this, Daryl, there's something called the National Security Study Memorandum 200, or NSSM 200. It was published back in 1974 over the signature of Henry Kissinger, who said that the major threat to America was overpopulation. Now, you can get that on the Internet. We actually offer that through our ministry, but it's cheaper for you if you get it off the Internet. NSSM 200, it's up there, and you'll find out that this is the major thrust of American foreign policy, is to limit the populations of countries throughout the world, specifically India, Bangladesh, Nigeria, and he lists about 10 countries. And the real reason for that is, if they have all those people there, they might industrialize, and they might become industrial powers that start using their own natural resources,
That's right.
We wouldn't be able to exploit them.
You're right. They may become world powers.
Right, and we don't want any competition.
Right.
Because it would interfere with the manifest destiny of our nation. But NSSM was classified for many years. It is available now. And there really are evil and wicked people out there who want to kill us.
You know, but it's a sad thing. Even on your program, I'm not putting you down. Believe me, I'm not putting you down. There's a lot of people that out there that don't have computers. We can't afford computers.
All right.
We give donations to particular, societies and things like that. But the information for people that don't have computers should be out there. And that should also be on your program.
Right. Well, we offer a lot of the things through our program, but, of course, we have to charge for them because it costs us to actually produce them. However, go to the local library and use a computer. Some people don't know how to use computers,
some
and that's why we make
get
the
to a local library. Some people can't do that.
Right.
You know,
well, that's why we make the things available through our
They're old, and they can't do that, you know. You've got to make things handicapped accessible.
Okay, fine, Darryl. We got to go, and thanks very much.
I understand that. You're handicapped accessible when you got to go.
Okay, God bless. Thanks so much for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, fine. Let's go to Tom, who's calling from Columbus, Ohio. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Oh, Dr. Stan, how are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Well, they're doing a dandy job on population control in this country. What is it up to now? About 50 million since they started the procedures that they developed in the death camps. Was it Auschwitz?
Yeah, what are you speaking of now, abortion?
Yeah.
Well, I think, of course, it's more than abortion. Basically what they do, they fluoridated the water in 67% of our communities, which lowers the testosterone level, lowers sperm count and sperm more mobility. And not only that, of course, it decreases fertility, they study. So it definitely decreases fertility as well as the effect on the mind and producing cancer. But water fluoridation is one very simple means of fertility control. And the average individual will never hear about it.
How are we going to stop them, Dr. Stan?
We have to educate people, Tom. We have to educate. That's all we can do. We've got to get people to begin to question what they've been told. And if we can get them to believe one thing, like fluoridation or the danger of vaccinations because of the mercury, or simply the danger of vaccination because it causes inflammation of the brain. And you, just about the time you're getting over your inflammation of your brain from your last influenza shot, they want to give you another one this year. So we've got to get people to realize that they're poisoning our people. Once you can get that through people's minds, that somebody's actually out there to hurt them and hurt their children and their grandchildren, at that point, at least they may be willing to listen to you. And that's why we have all the things we make available to people. Hopefully they'll use them and copy them and get them out.
Thank you for being there, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
Well, we will do it as long as God gives us breath.
Amen.
God bless. Thanks so very much. All right, fine. Well, I get our telephone number again. That is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. And of course, one of our earlier callers, Jim from Missouri, was talking about this professor down in Texas there who talked about the necessity of killing off 90% of the world's population with an Ebola. But he's not the first person to use that. If you go to Elberton, Georgia, why, of course, you'll find there the Georgia Guidestones and in stone on the two sides of the four great guidestones there. It's about 19 feet tall in Chinese and in English and in Russian and Spanish and Swahili and Arabic and Hebrew is this Ten Commandments that come from the dark side. Because, of course, this American Stonehenge or Georgia Guidestones was built by a secret group, and nobody knows who they are. In fact, nobody even knows who the man who called himself R.C. Christian was, although some people have suggested that R.C. Christian was a nom de plume for the Rosicrucians. Be that as it may, why, of course, point number one on the Georgia Guidestones is maintain the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. And then back in, 1996, speaking at the roundtable discussion that was held at the Gorbachev Conference in San Francisco that year, in the fall of that year, why Dr. Sam Keen, a New Age writer and philosopher, got up before an audience and stated, that there is strong agreement that religious institutions have to take a primary responsibility for population explosion. And he went on to say, and I quote, "We must speak far more clearly about sexuality, contraception, about abortion, about the values that control the population, because the ecological crisis, in short, is the population crisis. Cut the population by 90%, and there aren't enough people left to do a great deal of ecological damage." And of course, Dr. Sam Kane got a standing ovation from the people there at the Gorbachev conference. Anyway, let's go to Eric, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
Oh, great, Dr. Stan. Thanks for having your radio show on. I really appreciate listening to it. One of the things I wanted to comment on was after listening to one of your previous listeners and the comment about the fluoridation in the water that you were discussing. One of the things I like about living here on the Central Coast, in Santa Cruz in particular, now we may have our set of problems, you know, as far as liberal-minded thinking may not always send us in the right direction. It has, however, protected us from, you know, putting in this fluoridation into our water. We voted it down, it was brought up, and we said no.
And I think that's really so interesting, Eric, because it was really a sort of effort between the far right and the far left working together in concert that I think had a profound impact on that vote. And I congratulate the liberals and the environmentalists in our community for doing what I think was absolutely right on that issue. And whenever we can agree, we need to work together. And I will tell you that in so many other communities, they don't work together, and of course, then by dividing, they conquer, and they've got the fluoride in, and they're poisoning people all across the state of California.
Absolutely, and the other thing I wanted to comment on was on a bigger thing. As I was driving down the street, I noticed there was a Burger King down the street from me, and, you know, the corporations, the huge corporations have been poisoning our country with these horrible, horrible chemicals, these very low-grade food sources that they're using, as they exploit these third world countries to force these chemicals and these toxins into our environment and into our human beings that we eat these substances. It's absolute garbage. And another thing that we're doing in this area that a lot of people, not everybody, but I for one, try to eat foods from a natural source. I have a little organic garden in the yard, and I try to give my child fresh vegetables that I grow myself. And these are the kinds of things that my great-grandmother used to do. And her generation did, probably, you know, your generation before you, I want to guess, ate everything that was generally natural and unprocessed. It wasn't until, you know, later into this industrial revolution and modernization that we decided to poison everybody.
Well, I think that you're a lot healthier by using organic foods. And it's sort of fun to see those plants and the tomatoes come up. And, you know, we've done this in the past, and we've really enjoyed doing it. And it is truly a miraculous thing to see that little yellow blossom on the tomato plant become a big, luscious tomato.
Exactly.
But,
and, you know,
So what we really have to do, Eric, is get people to understand that almost so many of the things that are out there are designed to poison us. And there are certain things that, you need pesticides, but it's what you use. And what they've done is many times outlaw things that are really safe and bring things in and are very, very toxic. And there's spraying.
And the final comment I want to make is that it's quite interesting. If you do your research, you'll find that a lot of the money that supports these third world, destruction, the big corporations that provide us with all this toxic junk food, are also the same companies that provide us with the medical drugs and the pharmaceuticals to support the treatment of these said defects that are coming up in our system.
What you're suggesting is they create the disease, and then they set out to cure the disease with medicines that many times create new diseases.
And while they're simultaneously killing us, they're making a fast buck in both directions.
Well, I hate to say it, but there's a lot of truth in what you're saying. As we get into some of the scams that are being put over on the American people today, like the statin drugs, if you don't take them, you're going to die. What they don't tell you is if you do take them, you're going to die. And you know, if you look and see the statistics on the use of statin drugs, you may not die of a heart disease. You'll die of congestive heart failure or the cancer produced by the statin drugs. But they will never tell you that. But any of our listeners out there who would like to question what I'm saying, you give us a call or drop us a note, and we'll send you the information on Crestor, put out by the company that puts it out. Now, you remember Crestor? That's the blue spiral staircase, and the fellow coming down, you know, walking down, and each stair has a lower cholesterol number.
Right, right.
And, of course, basically, they will tell you in their own brochures this does not affect cardiac morbidity or cardiac mortality. Well, most people don't know what they're talking about. Morbidity is sickness and mortality is death. In other words, you take Crestor, it's not going to affect your illness from cardiac disease or death from cardiac disease. But if you don't take it, you're going to die. And if you do take it, you're going to die. The American people are being snookered, and the doctors are being snookered. And next time you watch a television ad and they say, hey, ask your doctor if this product or that product is good for you, remember, your doctor really doesn't know. What he knows is what he's being told by the detail person who's told what to say by his employer, the drug company. So what they're trying to get is the doctors to validate the deceitful message being put out by the drug company. Don't you believe it? You check out those brochures yourself and find out the truth. And if you need help, why, give us a call. Anything else, Eric?
Thank you so much for your time.
God bless. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, it's always fun having open lines. I always enjoy them. I hope you do as well. If you have not yet read my Population Control Agenda monograph, it is available up on the Internet at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And it simply explains to you how they outlawed DDT. Why? Because, of course, it was saving so many lives from malaria. And after we, of course, did away with the DDT and banned it here, we've killed almost 100 million people throughout the world from malaria. They're even lying to you in the media about how many people die every year from malaria. The figure is about 3 million. You can Google that on your computer. Malaria, 3 million deaths a year, and you'll come up with that figure or pretty close to it. So over a period of 3 years, probably 33 years since 1973, we've killed off approximately 3 million a year, 33 years, approximately 100 million people. What people don't understand is that today, every year, between 300 million and 500 million people contract malaria every year. Now, most of them will get over it with medication, but they're miserable, they're non-productive, they're ill. If you've ever seen anybody with malaria, it's a pretty horrible disease to get their shakes and the chills and yet, of course, it's totally unnecessary. DDT sprayed on the inside of rooms, where people sleep, has a dramatic effect on controlling malaria. And everything is being done to block the saving of human lives. When you understand what we are really up against, why you begin to understand the enormity of what's going on. As we mentioned earlier in the program, in Botswana today, why they're monitoring the incidence of HIV in pregnant women. And in Botswana, every pregnant woman who comes in for premarital care, for prenatal care, in other words, she's pregnant, is tested. 46% of the pregnant women in Botswana are HIV infected. They're all going to die. Now, who's monitoring them? Why, the U.S. Commerce Department. We want to see the U.S. Census Bureau. We want to see what a great job we're doing in Botswana controlling HIV. And we are doing a great job if you want to kill off the population there. But if you doubt what I'm saying, we'll be glad to send you the figures because we get them regularly from the U.S. Commerce Department, the Bureau of the Census. Why are we down there monitoring HIV in Africa? Why is the Census Bureau doing that? Why? Because the major thrust of American foreign policy is population control. That's what it's really all about. If you want the figures, we'd be glad to send them to you. Or anything we say that you need to have the documentation on, you need to get it, and you can get it from Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners out all across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will seriously consider helping us because, quite frankly, we need your help to maintain the network that we put together of about 60 radio outlets every week. And we're reaching people all across America, but we need to reach a lot more. And we need to teach them how to let people understand America is under attack. And while our boys are fighting and dying in the Middle East, we're losing our freedom here at home. And our children's minds are being destroyed with fluoride and with mercury in the vaccines, influenza vaccines that they're giving. And, of course, they don't tell the parents that they're toxic doses of mercury in the influenza vaccine. and we're giving it, of course, to pregnant women in the first trimester. Why would you give them mercury? There's no safe level of mercury. You know, in pregnancy, oh, we tell women, pregnant women, to protect your child, don't drink and don't smoke and don't eat tuna fish. And then we give them a shot of mercury in the influenza vaccine. Well, it doesn't do you any good if you doubt that. We have a great video by Dr. Ayoub. That's Dr. Ayoub's video on mercury, on influenza vaccine. You need to get that. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You ought to get my talk on planned population reduction. You can get our material on population, a video on population reduction, or you can get the tape sets on that, or the population control special. You certainly would want to get my monograph. You can pull it down free off the internet, or if you get some other item, why, we'll be glad to send you a free copy. The population control agenda monograph is, well, it's one of the best things available in America today, and I'd like to update it if I had the time, but it is still gives you more information, more insight into how they're destroying the minds and health and lives of our people than anything else out there. So, again, if you'd like to get the Population Control Agenda monograph or the other items we've talked about on population control, the talk, plant population reduction, the video on population control, the four-tape sets on population control that go into DDT, and all the other diabolical things that they're doing, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, we all hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to coming to the all-day conference we're going to be having. It's going to be on the 29th of this month. It's going to be at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. You're going to have reservations because we're serving lunch and need to know how many people will be there. That's the 29th of October. We're bringing in speakers from outside. Constance Cumbie from Detroit. And, of course, the gentleman who actually produced the video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, that's Chris Pinto. We'll have other great speakers there. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Of course, we hope that you can come and bring as many people as you can. We've got a pretty good response so far, but we hope, of course, to really just pack the place out. So if you can possibly make it on the 29th of October, why, give us a call. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will tell others about our program, that you'll challenge what we say. If you don't believe that they're poisoning the American people with fluoride, you need to get our syllabus and our talk on the hidden agenda. That's the hidden agenda. And, of course, basically, the syllabus has all the scientific papers, has letters from all over Europe. They won't allow water fluoridation in European countries. They know how toxic it is. But what they're doing in America is a massive experiment. They're experimenting on you and your children and destroying their minds. And in areas where they have fluoridated water, they have a lot more people with low IQs and literally no geniuses. And they're doing it. They're doing it intentionally. Why is it, do you think, that when our kids graduate from high school in the United States and they compete with children from elsewhere in the world, they just can't compete? Oh, they'll tell you, well, what we need is more money for education. No, they're intentionally destroying the minds of the American children. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty. forever. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But, of course, our guest this evening is Ron Brown. We're going to be talking about economics, and I think it's really so fascinating. As you see, every day while the stock market hits a new high, at least we're told it's hitting a new high, but if you really look at the figures, and you remember since 2000 when it was about this level, why, we've had tremendous inflation. And if you calculate where the prices of the stock market would have to have a real new high, it would be about 13,800. But you see, everything is perception. They're playing games with our mind. They're telling you we're hitting new highs, and they're simply lying to you, because inflation destroys the value of the currency, the value of your savings, the value of everything that you have that's incremented in dollars, and the stock market is not hitting a new high. A new figure, but not a new high. It would have to be up to 13 if we were really there. And then, of course, the price of gasoline is going down. And in my estimation, this is all being manipulated. So that you'll be docile, and you'll, of course, I don't know how you're going to vote here, coming in November. But what the last thing they want is for the American people to really understand that they control both political parties. And, the last thing they would want was for you to break out of this pattern of voting for Socialist Party A or Socialist Party B, and perhaps even vote for an independent candidate, and begin to have other people in Washington, D.C., and in state capitals who are not part of the establishment, who are not under the control of the ruling elite. And that's what it's really all about. So right now, they're going to manipulate the price of oil down. They're going to manipulate the stock market up, and it all has to do with our minds and how our thoughts are being created. Our feelings are being manipulated by the invisible forces that control our reality. And with that as a background, Ron Brown, how are you doing?
Good to be with you again, Dr. Stan.
Well, we always look forward to having you on every month. And so what's your take? Certainly gold and silver have been taking an awful beating, haven't they?
Well, if you go back to the first of the year, gold was around $5.50. Silver was at $9.50. And it just took off, and by May, silver had hit $15.30 or so. Gold was at $7.30 and threatening to break into new high ground. And so the powers to be in Washington and the banking system at the Fed and so forth had to come in and try to get control, and they ambushed the market with an absolute vengeance. They drove silver from $15 right back down to $9.50 again, and gold went from, $7.30 back to around $5.50 in just a matter of weeks. But lo and behold, it stabilized very quickly and started to work its way back up higher. And by, September or so, silver was back approaching 13. Gold was at over 646.50, threatening to re-challenge the old highs going into the election, as you just alluded to. And I think what we've seen for the last month or two is an all-out ambush of the markets to prop things up, to make things look pretty going into the election.
And I think, of course, you find that people like, say, Goldman Sachs, that company, will actually first short the market. I mean, they have billions of dollars at their disposal, and they can simply short the market on the commodity market and drive the prices down. And they're doing that with both gold and silver because they don't want you to have any alternative other than the paper money that they create out of nothing and have the audacity to charge interest on. Well, Well, Ron, of course, I agree with you. I think that everything is being done in preparation for the elections. Of course, I think that when the elections are over, I don't know what's going to happen. I think we're just going to have to wait and see, but I think it's going to be a very, very interesting situation. My concern is that the people in Washington, D.C., are really intent upon going to war in the Middle East. Doesn't make any sense. Why would they want to go to war with Iran that may be able to develop, you know, nuclear weapons 10 years from now? And yet, just this last couple of days, North Korea, which is even a more brutal regime, you know, has exploded a nuclear device, so they have the capacity to actually produce them. So why do we want to go to war with Iran and ignore North Korea? I think if we want to go to war with somebody, we'd go to war with North Korea.
Well, I think it has something to do with the resources in the Middle East, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it does. Who knows? Or maybe there's another agenda we really don't understand. But, of course, my concern is if we do go to war with Iran, that they will, and they have a very formidable military, unlike North Korea, which has really very, very little. In fact, everything they have, they've got from communist China that got it from us. But Iran has a very effective military. They have some very effective torpedoes and very effective planes and anti-missile and anti-aircraft batteries. So if we go in there and we try to take out their facilities, why, we could lose planes. We could even lose a couple of our cruisers, maybe even a couple of our carriers. But even more than that, if they were to mine the Straits of Hormuz, they could block the oil coming out of the Persian Gulf and have a profound impact on oil supplies throughout the world. So why in heaven's name are we taking a chance on opening this can of worms? It really doesn't make sense.
And I don't have any explanation for it either, Dr. Stan. Ultimately, what we know is that the dollar is collapsing, that the monetary system as we know it is being repudiated by the world, and the politicians will always have a cover for the collapse.
But, of course, you know, the dollar is right, I think, about 86 now, and that's not too bad. It's been a lot lower than that, got back up to 86. Certainly I share your concern that if we were to get into a war with Iran, and other countries are beginning to question the stability of our nation, and we're going to stop investing in America, which now has to borrow over $3.5 billion every day from other countries just to pay our debts, and if other countries quit financing our deficits, that could have a disastrous effect on our whole economic system, couldn't it?
Well, I think that's exactly what's happening. I was reading, before we came on
there.
Well,
hold that thought right there, Ron. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, we always welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But we were talking about the fact that the United States today is having to borrow almost $3.5 trillion every day just to meet our debts, so that we can actually keep the whole system going. And we're borrowing money from countries throughout the world. But what would happen? And I simply ask that question, if other countries quit funding us, and what were you saying, Ron?
Well, first place, I think you meant to say $3.5 billion a day, not $3.5 trillion.
Oh, I'm sorry, $3.5 billion. You're absolutely right.
Well, you know, a billion or a trillion here and a trillion there, stretch that up. There was a, I'm sure you're familiar with John Williams at ShadowStats.com.
No, I'm really not.
He really delves into what's really going on with government spending, and he comes up with what he calls the true government deficit. And according to him, the deficit for the year 2005 was $3.5 trillion in 1 year. Now, you say, the government's claiming, what, $500 billion deficit? Is that what they're
saying? Something like that, right.
And then I was reading the Hattrick letter before we went on the air, and remember a few years back there was the big scandal over what was going on at Fannie Mae, and that they might be bankrupt. Well, according to the Hattrick letter, Fannie Mae has not issued a financial statement since year 2003. Now, we're talking about the organization that created literally trillions of dollars of mortgage loans, right? They took a lot of those mortgages,
packaged them into what's called mortgage-backed securities and sold those into the market. And now, all of a sudden, we're not even reporting to hear what's going on with them. So that tells you right off the bat that they're totally bankrupt and probably in receivership. And I would be willing to bet that the Fed is stepping in to monetize and buy back those mortgage-backed securities and convert them to U.S. Treasury paper.
Well, now, I thought that actually that Fannie Mae then would sell them to other corporations or to other banking interests throughout the world, and that actually a lot of them were buying up these bundled securities, which are based upon the mortgages that Fannie Mae had actually lent out on. So who actually holds all of these mortgages? Is it Fannie Mae or is it foreign corporations?
Well, I'm sure people all over the world hold these mortgage-backed securities, but as they threaten to collapse in value, if that were allowed to happen, then the whole real estate market would just crater overnight. So what I suspect is doing, they're stepping in just like they came up with, back in the 80s, the what they call it when they bailed out the real estate crisis back then, the savings and loan bill. I can't even think of his name right now. But they came up with a federal organization which bailed out the, I'll think of the name of it in a second. But
anyway, they came up with a federal organization that bailed the whole thing out. Otherwise, it would have just taken down the whole monetary system.
Exactly.
And that was a savings and
of course, you can't prove any of this, but if you're running, I think everyone knows that the spending is just spinning out of control.
Now, my producer says the Resolution Trust. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, Resolution Trust. Well, I've got a very, very smart producer. So, anyway, I think that there's some very, very potentially explosive problems out there because they've created this totally artificial prosperity, not only in the United States, but throughout the world. So anyway, I think that they're just trying to hold this whole house of cards together, at least for the time being.
Well, you know, it's let's face it, our monetary system, the debt is just, it's gotten to an uncontrollable, an unsustainable level, and the only way to keep it going is to run the printing press. You know, if you either have to raise taxes, spend less money, or borrow more, or, in the case of all those are unacceptable, right? Because the foreigners are backing off. They're not willing to loan us more and more money. If we raise taxes, that's going to throw the economy into recession. We're certainly not going to see them stop spending more. So there's only one solution that they have, and that is to run the printing presses. And as they do that faster and faster and faster, as the deficits spend, you know, the deficits get bigger and bigger and bigger, then the foreigners are unwilling, even if they wanted to keep buying more and more of our debt. So they're backing off or can't keep up. So I think that's forcing us to just massively monetize the debt.
Well, you know, Ron, if you study history, you go back into what happened in ancient Greece, you know, at the time of the wars of Athens and Sparta, and it was simply the repeated wars and the expenditures of all sorts of senseless money that eventually bankrupted the society and it collapsed. The same thing actually happened in ancient Rome, and Cicero had said, you know, the budget should be balanced, public spending reduced, the arrogance of his officialdom tempered, and lending to foreign countries stopped, lest Rome go bankrupt. And they didn't listen to Cicero, and of course Rome went bankrupt, and that was the end of the Rome era of the Roman Republic, and they were replaced, of course, with the Roman Empire, which was a ruthless, tyrannical government. Well, of course, things have speeded up a lot since then. The same things happened time and time and time again. You can't keep spending all sorts of money on wars, and especially contriving wars and fighting wars, you know, without eventually bankrupting the nation. Right now, we're putting out, I don't know, $400 or $500 billion a year, you know, on our military, and that doesn't usually include what it costs for this war over in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're going to be asking for another $60 or $70 billion for that as a temporary expedient, and now they're talking about going to war with Iran. And where is the outcry from the American people? I mean, aren't they concerned about the financial stability of our nation? Do you think that you can keep spending and spending and spending without one day having to face the Piper?
Well, you know, I agree with you, but obviously what has happened over the last 20, 30 years, you know, people like you and me have been talking about this for 20 to 30 years, how we can't keep going on and on and on, and yet they keep pulling another rabbit out of their hat. They keep somehow bailing the system out. So people just become anesthetized to it, I believe. They just start to believe they can just do it forever. And, of course, they can't. There is a tipping point when at some point the system just can't sustain it. There's no more tricks to pull out to keep it going.
Well, they sustained it for a long time with the stock market and an artificial inflation of the stock market. And then the bubble burst, and then they created the housing bubble, and they did it. And Alan Greenspan was encouraging people to take out the adjustable rate mortgages and encouraging giving mortgages to people who never could have qualified for it. And I know people who bought homes and got money back because they bought the home. In other words, they let more money on the home than they actually paid for it. And eventually the day comes when this whole thing is going to begin to implode. And I think that the housing bubble is imploding now. So where are the people who are spending more than they're making going to continue getting money to spend and spend? In fact, there was an article I read just today in the New York Times where they were quoting Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury, saying, you know, well, just because we have this massive deficit with communist China isn't so bad. Look what we're doing. We're buying from the rest of the world and stimulating the world economy. Isn't that great? And, of course, he's talking about our massive deficits. He seems to be totally unconcerned about it. And even on the editorial pages of the Wall Street, of the New York Times, they were saying there's something wrong with Mr. Paulson's logic. I mean, you can't keep spending more than you're taking it indefinitely. And why should we be concerned about the fact we're helping the rest of the world by spending all this money when our own economy, of course, is beginning to contract?
Well, you know, as you and I have discussed for the last 4 or 5 years, I've called it a Ponzi scheme. And the system, the debt is so massive, you must keep it growing. You can never allow it to contract. So every time the laws of economics start to try to take it down and you know, do away with this unsustainable debt structure, the politicians come up with another trick to try to print their way out of it. And you just hit two or three of them. You know, you had the high-tech boom in the 90s, and when that busted, they came out with the real estate bubble, and they kept that one going for the last 4 or 5 years by making it easier and easier and easier, no doc loans, no interest loans, you know, just to keep the bubble going. And then at some point, you're right, it has to run out of tricks, and at that point, the day of reckoning is going to come with a vengeance, and it won't take any prisoners, and people, as I see it, are totally ill-prepared for what's coming down.
Well, I really think it's so important that people understand that we're in very, very serious financial problems, and they've got to get themselves out of debt. They've got to get themselves into a position where they cannot be hurt if there's a major cataclysmic event, or as I refer to it in my talk, a financial tsunami. And I really believe that perhaps one reason for the coming war in Iran is a cover for a financial collapse, and then we can always blame it not on our leaders, not on our congressmen and our senators who've been taking pork out and taking graft and corruption. We'll blame it on the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's probably been dead for a couple of years now anyway, but we can always blame it on him. And, you know, if they control the media, they'll be able to convince the American people why it was the wicked Osama bin Laden responsible for the whole thing.
Always remember when we get to points like this, the quotes from Kissinger and Rockefeller, where they basically said, the world would not accept our new world order today, but given the right financial crisis, they will welcome us with open arms. And
I think every one of our listeners should get hold of the latest editorial op-ed page article by Henry Kissinger. I think it was September 13th in the Washington Post, but it's called Leaving Lebanon. Leaving Lebanon. Get it and read it. I'm quoting it in my next newsletter. And you have to understand, they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want us to understand it. As Henry Kissinger says, we have, of course, two alternatives. One is to establish a new world order. The other is a global catastrophe. In other words, we give up our sovereignty and our freedom, or there's going to be a global catastrophe of unparalleled severity. Well, Dr. Stan here, our guest is Ron Brown. Of course, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to give us a call, the number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, Ron, is there much interest in gold and silver now? Usually it seems when the prices are down, why, nobody much is that interested in it. When the prices are running and racing higher, and it's a poor time to buy, then everybody wants to buy it.
Well, that's exactly what's happening. Throughout the summer months, it's really slowed down dramatically. In fact, I would say probably 70-80% for my business. And even the people who are wanting to buy are waiting till after the election now. And, you know, I think after the election, it'll turn around and start back up. So the day's coming, but people get mesmerized by these corrections. And, you know, it was a lot of fun when they were going up, and most people wait till it goes up to buy. And then when it has the normal correction, then they feel the pain, so they say never again, you know. So I think Jesse Livermore said it best. He said, The key to good investment is to be right and sit tight. And basically, we're in a long-term dollar bear market and a long-term commodity, especially gold and silver, bull market. So the trick to me is to treat your gold and silver not just as an investment but as an insurance policy. Buy it and take possession of it and just ride through the ups and downs because, you know, unless you're a true expert, not many of us are, none of us can know when to get out and back in. So,
and I think you're absolutely right. There's going to be a roller coaster ride, and you try to know when to get off and on while you're going to have a lot of heartache. And, of course, you're going to be motivated by greed and by fear, and fear and greed, and you're better off not to try to figure out the market. Either believe that we're in serious economic problems and you need the safety of metals, or you simply, you know, just leave your money in the bank, and I fear that the value of it will be progressively eroded, as we saw in Zimbabwe, old Rhodesia. The recent issuing of $100,000 note, and of course, $100,000 note will buy you about a whole loaf of bread. And I can remember one time when there was $2 or $3 for one Rhodesian dollar. It was the strongest currency in Africa, and it's just in relatively few years. They've destroyed the values of everybody in the country and impoverished both black and white population. And actually, probably 5 million of the 20 million blacks have fled the country simply because of tremendous hunger there. And remember, this is the government that Henry Kissinger installed. This is the government that the American State Department installed in Rhodesia, now called Zimbabwe. And if they would do it over there, why would we think that they would hesitate to do the same thing here in America when the time comes? So I think that we should certainly learn by what American policy has wrought for Zimbabwe. And I would see no reason in the world why the people who destroyed this really utopian society for both black and white, because there was no institutionalized discrimination there. Blacks could own property. Blacks were certainly some of the most highly educated in the country, and the highest living standards in Africa for blacks were in Rhodesia. And our government set out to destroy that and brought to power one of the most ruthless communist in the entire world, a Maoist named Robert Mugabe, who is the president of Zimbabwe today. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ron Brown. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Ron about what's happening economically, and I really think that we're seeing a situation where right now the dollar is not doing too badly, but I agree with Ron, it's in a long-term downtrend, and if it breaks 80, why, it's going to be a straight fall all the way down to 50. And what this means is American goods will be far better, more competitive throughout the world. But when you buy anything, whether it's from China or from Europe or any other country, it'll be massively more expensive. And we'll gradually grind down the living standards of the American people. And they really want equality. They want to bring our living standards down to that of the Mexican peasant. It was so interesting today, and my wife commented on this too. Almost all the companies, major companies you call today, and you call in, they give you both English and Spanish. Now, this is an American country, but there are people who want to convert us into a bilingual country or a multilingual country. So somebody has given orders that when you call, you know, for information from major companies, they will always give you a message in English and Spanish, as it's the most normal thing in the world. No. This is a coordinated effort, of course, to create a bilingual nation and a multicultural nation, a multilingual nation. It is language that joins a nation together. It is language, of course, that splits a nation apart. And that's exactly what they're doing. And when you call these major corporations and you notice that they are giving the messages in both English and Spanish, what they're doing is encouraging people who speak Spanish not to learn the language of America. Have you run into that, Ron?
Yeah, it seems like even when you buy any product, they have the instructions in Spanish and English. So, yeah, I've noticed what you're talking about.
And I think it's a very organized, orchestrated effort, but it's all a matter of perception. It's how they mold our minds and make us think, well, it's the most normal thing in the world to have it both in English and Spanish. And you've forgotten that we are an American country. And if you want to be an American, you learn the American language. You do not learn the Spanish language. And the people who have come to this country should learn our language, or else you will have a society that they can play one unit against the other unit, the Spanish-speaking against the American, English-speaking, and that's exactly what they intend to do. This is long-range planning. Of course, it's to destroy our nation, to lower our living standards, to impoverish our people, and it's about time the American people woke up to the fact that what is happening is not by accident, but in my impression, my opinion, by intent. So, anyway, this is certainly a problem, and I believe that very soon we'll have that same prosperity that today exists in southern Mexico. People say it can't happen here, and I would simply ask, if God is just, why couldn't it happen here? Our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and you pick up the story there, Ron.
Well, you know, if you'll recall a few years back, getting back to the illusion of prosperity, I remember someone called in and we were talking at that time about how the stock market was bearish and it going below 10 was heading down, I think, towards it hit 7,300 or so. And we were talking about the bearishness of the stock market. And I remember someone called in and said, well, Ron, where do you think the stock market's going to bottom if you're so bearish? And to try to get people's attention, I said at that time, well, it'll probably bottom somewhere around 20,000 on the Dow. And I was trying to draw people's attention to what you alluded to at the beginning of the show, that here we have, they're bragging about a new high on the Dow Jones, yet in real terms, in purchasing power terms, you'd have to have 14,000 or so on the Dow just to get to break even over the last 6 years. So what we're going to see, and I think it's the illusion that people are going to have to wake up to if they want to survive, that is, just making a few percentage points in nominal dollars is not going to protect you as the dollar starts to go downhill at a rapid pace. And so people need to wake up to what's really going on with the destruction of the purchasing power of our dollar.
In fact, I was talking to our good friend Joan Vian the other day, and Joan was saying that she has, because she runs a financial consulting service as well as the women's group that sends her all over the world to get information. But she was saying that she has people she's been making 22% a year for, 22.5% a year, and they wanted to go into bonds. And she said, I won't put you in bonds. So they quit her and they went elsewhere because they wanted to get into the security of bonds. Without realizing, of course, that you're in bonds and maybe you're going to make 4 or 5%. But you make 4 or 5%, and then you have to pay income tax on it, and the inflation's rate 10%, you're going behind, you know, about 8% every year, and you're not even realizing it because you got the same number of dollars, it's just that you don't have the value. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment here, and we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Ron Brown, and we're talking about, well, we're talking about what's going on economically, and most people really don't understand that paper money is, you know, and bonds and things that are incremented in paper money are certificates of guaranteed confiscation. And they progressively destroy the value of money and of bonds and of annuities and of CDs and of bank accounts and of anything that is incremented in dollars as they progressively destroy the value of the dollar. They know what they're doing, but the last thing they want is for the American people to know. But believe me, the smart people are protecting themselves, the Warren Buffetts and the George Soros's and the William Gates, and they're getting their money into things that are not going to be destroyed as the value of the currency is destroyed. And is Warren Buffett still shorting the dollar overseas? You know, have you read about that recently?
The last I heard, he certainly was. I don't follow him, you know, on a regular basis. I just read about him from time to time. You know, he made that big foray into the silver market, and I think they kind of forced him out on that. But he and Bill Gates are very, very involved in gold and silver.
I think it was really so interesting that, you know, Warren Buffett made a major purchase overseas. And where did he make it? He made it in Israel. We're talking about a buying of $100 million, several hundred, maybe it was a $1 billion company. I really don't remember. I mean, a billion. But anyway, Warren Buffett said he doesn't see a lot of good things here in America, you know, at least bargains right now. So he's beginning to actually invest his Berkshire Hathaway funds in foreign countries at the present time. So I think he's a very, very smart man. I think that Warren Buffett has connections at the highest level, and I believe that he knows what the world, what the future holds economically for our nation. Well, we've got the Mike calling, and where's Mike calling from? Oh, we've got Mike calling from Santa Cruz, and once again, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Hi, Mike, do you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question. I want to ask Mr. Brown if he knows where I could find a compilation of, a list of names of who we owe all this money to. Either it's countries or it's individuals, wealthy individuals, or other institutions. But I have to tell you why I'm asking. It's because you know, repeatedly we get the message from your program, Stan, that we're headed somewhere and we don't know where, and it's not reversible. And so whoever is holding our debt now is going to own us, and America is going to look like whatever they want it to look like because they'll own it. So I wonder just...
Hold on just a moment. Yeah. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Mike is calling, and Mike is asking Ron if he knows, you know, where he could get a list of the people are who hold America's debt. And now we're talking about America's national debt, the money, the resources that our government is borrowing from other countries, you know, to maintain our situation. Do you have any idea where he could get that list?
Boy, not a concise list of everything. You know, we just heard that China went over $1 trillion holding our paper here in just the last month or so. We know Japan has, $600 billion worth of our debt paper. You know, it's held by pension plans. It's held by corporations around the globe, by wealthy investors, by retired people. But as far as the precise list, I don't know where to get it.
I would think you would probably Google it up on the Internet, but I don't have a list either myself. But we do know, of course, that China, Japan, England, Germany are big holders of America's debt. And isn't it interesting that Japan and Germany, two of the countries where we have American troops stationed, are large investors in our debt? But I'm sure that's just a coincidence. Anything else, Mike?
Good enough for now. Thanks
God a lot. God bless. Thanks so much. Again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, Ron, this is the time when I'd like you to get out your telephone number, and if you have a website, to get it out. But the important thing is, how can people get in touch with you? And if they do, what, of course, information will you give them?
Okay. I try to write a newsletter from time to time, and what I attempt to do is I know that I'm sending this letter out to people that are novices in economics and are not students of it. So what I try to do is do it in capsule form and put it in a layman's type language where it makes sense to the average person out there. And so I'll put a little package of those together, and I'll send them to anyone that's interested for free. If they'd like to call me and then order it, my number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. And Chris, our guest is Ron Brown, and we're talking simply about what's going on economically in our country today. As of right now, we're sort of drifting along. We find that more and more of our corporations are leaving the country. Whirlpool is laying off, I think, 1,400 people and is moving more of its plants to Mexico. It already has a lot of plants in Mexico, but they're simply moving increasing number of their production overseas. And we see, of course, Ford cutting back massively on the jobs here in the United States. Remember that any time you lose a manufacturing job, you can figure you're going to lose about five other jobs in the workforce, because, you know, one person making a good salary has to spend that money, and the people who make it are going to spend it. And so there's this multiplier as far as jobs are concerned. So you lose a manufacturing job. Why, then you begin to lose all these other jobs within the service industries that put support to that job. And we're seeing Ford cutting back. We're seeing General Motors cutting back. I don't know so much of whether Chrysler is cutting back at the present time. I do know that Toyota is doing fairly well, and they're maintaining their increasing dominance of the market. I think they're moving up to number two, second to General Motors here in the United States. And so at least we're keeping those automotive jobs here in the United States. I'm anticipating that China in 2007, which is next year, coming very, very soon, is going to begin flooding America with cheap automobiles. And they're going to be turning out automobiles at $8,000 or $9,000. Apparently we don't know how good they are, but they're going to begin flooding the United States with automobiles. They have their dealerships open all across America. And, of course, they will continue flooding us with their products as long as we continue funding them. And the miracle that we've seen in China has all been produced here in the United States, and our Western European allies, England and America, have put literally trillions of dollars into communist China to build up their economy as they progressively destroy ours. And you have to ask yourself, why would they do that unless there's another agenda out there we do not understand? But China's military is increasing, as is Russia's military increasing, and they're investing more money all the time in preparation for a coming war. Why would we transfer technology? Why would we transfer our industrial base to a potential enemy? Unless, of course, there is another agenda there. So these are questions, I think, that plague me, and they ought to be plaguing the average American, but I don't think the average American ever stops and thinks about it. Do you, Ron?
Well, unfortunately, no. As long as we have this charade of a prosperity going, as long as people feel like, you know, as long as they can go down and borrow against their house and keep the spending going, then there couldn't be really anything wrong in America, and yet we're spending by going into debt, and that eventually you have to pay the piper. And unfortunately, that's where we're heading. Our nation has a negative savings rate of something like 4 or 5% now. So we're spending more money each year than we're making. We're not even saving. So how are we going to prepare for retirement if no one is saving anything?
Well, of course, the significant thing is that a lot of people have been getting by and living very well by borrowing money on their homes.
Sure.
And they've been refinancing their homes. They've used their homes as a piggy bank because the home has kept going up in value. But is it a real increase in value, or is it a perceived increase in value? And I would like to suggest that most of what's going on is really all a matter of perception. And now is the value of homes in some areas beginning to contract, and there are several areas where actually prices have gone down 10%. There are a few areas where the prices are still going up, and I'd say in most areas the prices have leveled off, but I think it's only a matter of time before prices do begin to fall. How far will they fall? We don't know. We do know that in Tokyo, when the system collapsed back in 1991, property values fell 90%. Now, I don't think it's going to fall that far here in America. because we haven't gone up as far as they did in Tokyo or in Japan. But I think that we can expect some healthy falls. And, of course, one of these days, people are going to owe more on their property than it's actually worth. And then they're going to be, and they're still going to have to be paying that loan off. They're going to have two options. And one is, of course, to, walk away from their loan. The other is to keep paying money for a house that is worth less than they're paying the interest, paying the payments on. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this unfolds.
Well, I was reading just before we came on the air that 25% of these zero down payment loans that have been made over the last 2-3 years now have a negative equity in them. So people are already getting behind the eight ball, and I think what's starting to happen now, and there's going to be a delayed reaction. Because, and I'll give my next-door neighbor as an example, he bought a house and then refinanced it about 2 or 3 years ago, pulled all the equity out, used the money to start a little business, which failed. And so because of his business failures, his income was dropping, and so he decided he would sell his house to just take the pressure off, get out of that high mortgage in a rental house or something with a less payment. And so he called the real estate agent out, and the agent came out and said, "Sorry, Charlie, we can't sell this house for anywhere close to what you owe on it." So now he's in a situation where in order to sell your house, and I bet there's literally thousands, if not millions of people soon in the real estate market, are going to find that in order to sell their house, they're going to have to come up with $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 at closing just to close it out. And if you don't have $10,000 or whatever it takes to do it, how are you going to sell the house? So what I think people are doing, they're just kind of like a deer in the headlights now. They don't know what to do except to just ride it as long as they can. And, you know, a few years back when the bubble hit and the dot-coms and everything, and people with these expensive cars just ended up driving them up to the bank and leaving them with the keys in and walking away from them. And I suspect that's what you're going to see happen in the real estate market when this thing really accelerates. So it's a little frightening to think where we're headed.
Well, of course, the one thing is, of course, for the car, sometimes the car isn't worth what you still owe on it. And, of course, at one time you could walk away from that, but they've changed the rules so that if they end up selling the car for less than you owe on it, you still have to pay the rest of that. They changed the bankruptcy laws all across America. And just about the time that they knew this whole house of cards was going to begin to implode, and there's an awful lot of people, you know, they think, the worst thing that can happen is I'll just lose my equity, and they find they're going to lose a lot more than that.
Well, it just confirms the scriptures that say the borrower becomes the slave to the lender, and that's exactly what's starting to happen, and it's sad.
Well, I think we're just going to have to wait and see right now. Of course, I think that probably next year where we'll begin to see more of a contraction of the real estate market. And we'll see, of course, declining availability of jobs. And, you know, they keep telling us how great the job market is. But, of course, at least according to Bob Chapman, you know, the unemployment rate is running at 11, 12, even up to 13% in some parts of the country because a lot of the people have run out of their benefits. They're not even counted in these government figures. And then the government lies about the unemployment rate, just as they lie about the inflation rate. Just as they lied about what happened to Pat Tillman over there, who was killed, a football player was killed over in Afghanistan. And they lied about Jessica Lynch. You remember the heroic woman who fought there, in Iraq until the last bullet was gone from her gun and then was wounded by the wicked Iraqis and saved by the heroic Green Berets. And it was all contrived. There was not a bit of truth to the story, but it sure made a good story. As they say, in war, and I believe in what's going on in America today, the first casualty is the truth. And we're going to have to figure out what's going on our own and look after ourselves. Because I do not believe we can depend upon officials at any level of government to tell the truth. Well, now, of course, what do you think is going to happen to gold and silver? Do you think, of course, they're going to go up after the election? Do you think they're going to stay where they are? Or do you think they may even fall further? Or is there any way that we could have any idea what's going to happen?
Well, no one can predict on the short term. You know, when you think of all the loose money that's flushing around the globe out there, you know, literally trillions of dollars. What would it take to take $10 billion or $20 billion and go into the futures market to manipulate the price of gold or silver on the short term? So on the short term, it's hard to predict exactly what gold and silver are going to do, but you have to keep in mind that what you're buying the gold and silver for mainly is a refuge because of what's happened to the paper currencies around the globe. And so it's not a get-rich-quick scheme. It's a protection. It's an insurance policy. And so a person needs to just understand the big picture of what's happening, buy the gold and silver, because it has been the one vehicle throughout all history that will protect the person from the collapse of these fiat money systems, which are, you know, thousands of them throughout history. All fiat systems ultimately fail. So gold and silver is the refuge. But obviously, the bankers who are trying to keep their paper system going will attack and ridicule gold with a vengeance, because it is basically, when you're buying gold or silver, you're saying, I don't trust your paper money system, so I'm going to buy gold and silver to protect myself from your folly. And, of course, they don't take too kindly to that, because you're really giving them a vote of no confidence. So they will always fight gold and silver with a vengeance, and you have to just understand that and just buy it and hang on, because it's very little doubt that the deficits are spinning further and further out of control. Therefore, the dollar is in deep trouble in the near future.
Well, I think that, so what if you were going to get gold or silver? What would you get? Would you get just would you get collector's coins? Would you get foreign coins? Would you get bullion coins? What would you get?
I would get gold and silver in smaller increments. I would stick with bullion-type coins. There is an interesting phenomenon going now. You know, normally when you get into the U.S. $20 gold pieces, you're talking numismatic-type coins where you're going to pay a horrendous premium, you know, sometimes 2 to 3 times the price of gold, depending on what grade of coin you're getting. But in just the last few months, the U.S. Mint came out with a new bullion gold coin. It's called the Buffalo. And it's the first 24-karat gold coin the U.S. Mint's ever made. It's really just a knockoff of the old Buffalo nickel. It has the Indian on one side and the Buffalo on the other side. And whenever a new coin comes out, the coin dealers around the country just jump on board and start to hype it as if it's the second coming. And they charge horrendous markups. Some of them, I've seen people pay over $1,000 for one of these gold coins when gold was trading under $600. So what's happened is it's an opportunity for people, in my opinion. In order to raise the money to buy as many of those buffaloes as they could, a lot of the coin dealers have been dumping their other gold coins. For example, I can get AU, almost uncirculated, $20 libs, which are 100-plus-year-old coins, and you can get them for cheaper than you could buy a bullion gold coin. So to me, whenever you can buy a 100-year-old coin, which is going to have some collector value, at a bullion price, then by all means do it, because you're not paying anything extra for the collector value.
And is there anything that these will appreciate in value when the price of gold starts going up again?
Sure. The one thing you can say about those coins that you can't say about the bullion coins is that you can't make any more pre-20 or pre-1900 gold coins, can you?
Well, now, were you talking about liberties? Are you talking about St. Gaudians or what?
Well, both of them. Either one. You know, in AU condition, the St. Gaudens are about $10 more than the libs.
What would they go for right now?
Sold some today for like $612.
All right.
And then gold's at 570-something.
That sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah. And, you know, when the gold starts back up, which it surely will, and the demand starts to rise, then the availability of those coins will dry up, and those same dealers that have been dumping all their coins will be out trying to get them back or buy more, and you'll see the premium on those coins go up probably higher than they would have normally.
All right, fine. Well, of course, our guest is Ron Brown, and he's what about sovereigns? Somebody had just called in and asked, what about British sovereigns?
Well, I have nothing against them. There's a lot of the foreign coins. What you have to be careful of is a lot of the collector numismatic type dealers will hype these and sell them for high premiums. When in reality, my experience has been with when you go to sell them back, you're going to get melt for them.
Now, basically, are the sovereigns what, about a quarter of an ounce of gold?
0.2354 ounces.
0.235, okay, so a little less than a quarter of an ounce. Then.
Right.
All right, fine. Certainly, they were stable in the British Empire for many years, but that's, of course, when Britain had a solid currency that was gold-backed. And at one time, the British currency was dominant. In fact, it was during my lifetime. But following the Second World War, it was the first of the Second World Wars that literally bankrupted the United States and shifted the reserve currency from Great Britain to the United States, and I fear that the coming war may very well shift the reserve currency of the world even further west, perhaps either to Japan or to China. So we're in real trouble financially. Our guest this evening has been Ron Brown. Once again, to get your telephone number out, Ron?
That's 1-800-595-0561. And anyone that's listened, and you know, we go over a lot of ground in a very short period of time, so anyone that might have questions, just feel free to call me. I won't bite. I'll be glad to just sit down and chat with you and answer any question you might have.
All right, fine. Again, the telephone number one more time.
1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. Well, I think that, you know, we enjoy having Ron with us once a month, and as we talk about what's going on out there, and Ron does support Radio Liberty, and of course we believe Ron is an honest man, and we enjoy having him with us here. But I think that the one thing I would say to our listeners is beware, be very, very careful. These are the times as we move into a contracting economy and dramatic changes in the value of our currency on the world market. When, of course, if great fortunes will be made, or, of course, people will be impoverished. And I don't think I'm ever going to have a great fortune. That is not my goal in life. But, of course, what I want to do is be able to preserve what I have, you know, so for myself and for my family, and to be able to survive what I feel are going to be the very, very difficult financial times that lie ahead. What are your final thoughts for our listeners this evening, Ron, before we let you go?
Well, what I try to get across to my clients and people call in is that the monetary system that we've been on since, I would say, 1913, because we changed the nature of our money in 1913 when we went to the central bank, that system is now failing, as all fiat systems do. So as that paper system fails, we're heading towards some type of monetary crisis and monetary reform, which by definition means you're going to have to trade those old U.S. dollars in for something different or something new. Now, it looks like it may be something like the Amero, which is a common currency for the Americas. Who knows for sure on that? But the point is, do you want to go into that exchange holding paper dollars when the whole purpose for the exchange is to write off the massive debt of a bankrupt system? So gold and silver throughout history is the vehicle. It's the best vehicle. It's going to allow you to bridge the gap between one failing system and the new system that is going to replace it, whether it's the Amero or just a newly designed dollar or whatever. And so gold and silver, it will get you to the other side. Unfortunately, and this is the bad news, if we get to the other side and find we no longer have a governmental law or a constitutional republic, then can the government step in and take it? Of course they can if we live in tyranny. So I think the key would be to buy as much gold and silver today as you can, and then at some point in the future when gold has a major rally before we have a monetary...
Hold that thought for just a moment, everyone. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and as Ron was just saying, he thinks that people ought to invest in gold and silver. And then what are we going to say, Ron?
That when it has that major rally and gold goes up 400, 500, you know, I was reading something today, James Turk's predicting $8,000 gold. Well, at some point, you know, how high is gold going? The key is no one knows how high it's going. If the dollar is going to zero, then gold is going to infinity. But at some point, what people need to do is set their first priority is to get totally, totally out of debt. So when you reach a point when you can sell a half or a third or whatever percentage of your gold and silver and get totally out of debt, then that's what to do, even though you're probably selling too early. because I think our number one priority should not be to be not in debt as we go into this crisis.
Well, thank you very much, Ron. We'll look forward to talking to you again next month.
Okie dokie.
Good night, guys.
Enjoyed being with you.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Ron Brown. I hope you enjoy our conversations, our monthly conversations. And, of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We really need your help, and if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family or help us in any way, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 because, oh, believe me, we want to be able to maintain our network out across America of small stations and large stations that do hear our programs, and we're on some of the largest stations here in California and certainly in, here along the West Coast. I wish we had as good coverage across America, but we got upstate New York pretty well covered and New Mexico outside of Phoenix, and we've got stations certainly in many parts of the country that carry all some or many of our programs. If there's any way you can help, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will seriously consider attending our all-day conference we're going to have on the 29th of October, when we're going to be bringing in speakers from outside and when we're going to be able to pursue, have people coming from all over the country. And we always have a good time at the annual Radio Liberty Conference. That's the 29th of October at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. But if you're going to be able to come, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 because we do need reservations ahead of time. And then, of course, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to. If you want to learn more about finances, we have a talk called The Financial Tsunami. It's available either on DVD or on video, and then, of course, we have a syllabus that goes with that, and the syllabus is so important. If you'd like to really understand the wars of the 20th century, my talk on Iraq, The Untold Story, and it comes with a syllabus that gives you the documentation of how all of the wars have been contrived, including the attack on Iraq, which was planned long beforehand by the very people who are leading our government today. And you don't have to take my word for it. You read what they have written. Because we've taken the material from their website, which is Project for the New American Century, and included it in our syllabus, and you need to read it, and you need to understand that everything that is going on in Iraq today was planned long ago. There is no need for the situation it is, but of course, if we didn't have the chaos, how could we justify keeping our troops there indefinitely? And that was the plan that they laid out. And they said in their pamphlet, from their website, which you can read in my syllabus, it doesn't matter who controls Iraq. It doesn't matter whether Saddam is there or not. We want to keep troops permanently stationed in the Middle East, in Iraq. That's what it's about. That's why the boys are dying over there, senselessly and needlessly. You need to document what I'm saying. The telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And you need to get the Iraq, The Untold Story, the video, the syllabus, and help us reach out across America with the truth. And people have to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle. There are powerful spiritual forces that are energizing the people who are doing the terrible things that are going on. You need to get our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. You need to get the book, Hostage to the Devil, by Malachi Martin, or the Diary of a Devil Hunter, excellent book on a man who was into Satanism and came out and is trying to warn people what's going on. And when you begin to understand the enormity of what we're up against, then hopefully you'll join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation under God can long exist.
morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of Yah's creation. It is Tuesday, the 10th of October, 2006.